get to. It wants to bring in the U.S. To this direct confrontation, because ultimately Iran is its target. It sees it as like the head of all of the forces of resistance that are currently and chipping away at its existence. That's kind of how things are expected to play out and escalate if we see it going forth as it is.
Okay, we're keeping our eyes, of course, very closely on that. Appreciate both of you being with us on the spotlight. Julia Qasem, journalist and political analyst out of Beirut. Zaki Ahmed Mayed, attorney, activist, and political analyst out of Johannesburg. And thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
U.S. military conducts another missile attack on Yemen, targeting a radar site in Sana'a. Russia's UN ambassador warns the U.S. and U.K. of fueling a regional war. American people call on Biden to keep his hands off Yemen. And the U.N. says Israel is preventing aid into the Gaza Strip as death toll there rises past 23,700. The U.S. military has conducted a fresh strike on Yemen, targeting a radar site in the capital Sana'a. The U.S. military has called it a follow-up action against the Arab country over its attacks in the Red Sea, that despite repeated clarifications by the Yemeni armed forces that they've only been targeting Israeli and Israeli-linked ships over the regime's bloodshed in Gaza. Yemen says all ships except those heading to Israeli ports are safe, but American and British forces have conducted dozens of raids targeting Sana'a and other Yemeni cities. Under the explained pretext, attacks were carried out on U.S. President Joe Biden's orders and supported by Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, and Bahrain. The Yemeni army says Washington and London bear responsibility for the acts of aggression against the Arab country. Activist and political commentator Hussein Abu Khaiti says the U.S. military's claim that it's a targeted a radar site used to track American ships is questionable.
Yesterday around at 3:30 a.m., a huge explosion was heard from north of Sana'a, from the area where the Sana'a airport is located. And as the United States has announced, they said they have targeted a radar unit. And I don't know, I mean, mainly if there is any radar unit is used to track U.S. ship, it will be a radar unit that is in the coast of Yemen. I don't know that they could have been actually targeted targeted the radar that belongs to Sana'a Airport is not clear at this moment. And it was really strange in the statement of the U.S. Central Command about this latest attack. They said those strikes have no association and are separate from Operation Prosperity Guardian. I believe that United Kingdom, maybe it could not be part of this latest attack. That's why the United States has mentioned this in their statement. But here in Sana'a, all the official and commander, they have insist that the Yemeni retaliation will come, and it will come really, really big. And I just want to mention that in the first attack against Yemen, the United Kingdom has actually used Cyprus as an area where their fighter jet, the RAF, has took off towards Yemen.
Ahead of the Supreme Political Council of Yemen has warned U.S. and U.K. against any aggression on his country. Mati Al-Mashat said U.S. must note that Yemen is a graveyard of invaders. Top officials say U.S. and U.K. are responsible for the militarization of the Red Sea and not Yemen. He added, ending Israeli onslaught on Gaza is the only solution for the current problems and not invading Yemeni territory. Al-Mashat said Sana'a will not stop supporting Palestine despite America's aggression. Meanwhile, the spokesperson for Yemen's armed forces has vowed revenge after U.S. and U.K. carried out airstrikes on Yemen.
The U.S. and British enemies bear full responsibility for their criminal aggression against our Yemeni people and will not go unanswered and unpunished.
A spokesperson said U.S. and British militaries carried out 73 strikes targeting the capital Sana'a and four other Yemeni cities. Sari said offensive killed five Yemeni armed forces and injured six others. Yemen says its operations in the Red Sea pose no threat to international shipping, as attacks are only aimed at Israeli-bound vessels. Yemen has promised to continue its attacks until the Gaza genocide ends.
Yemenis from all walks of life took to the streets of the capital Sana'a to decry the U.S. and Britain strikes that targeted several cities across Yemen early Friday in support of Israel. They also denounced the U.S.-drafted resolution on the Red Sea that was adopted by the United Nations Security Council shortly before the strikes. The protesters also reaffirmed their support for their country's pro-Palestine operations despite the Western aggression.
The strikes launched by America and Britain were aimed at discouraging the Yemenis from carrying out military operations in the Red Sea. But Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi was clear in his speech that no one would be able to stop the Yemenis from supporting their Palestinian brothers. We in the Popular Front on Palestine appreciate what our Yemeni brothers are doing. And in 75 years, we have not found anyone who stood with us like the Yemeni people, despite the American-British threat.
The protesters chanted slogans in support of the Yemeni armed forces' operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. They stressed that despite the Western aggression against their country, they will not back down from their position in supporting the Palestinian people, whatever the cost.
The Yemeni armed forces were anticipating these strikes, and our position is clear and will not change, that we will continue to prevent Israeli-linked ships from reaching the occupied ports until medicine and food are allowed to enter Gaza, and the genocide committed by Israel is stopped. The American-British strikes violated Yemen's sovereignty, but did not affect the capabilities of the Yemeni army.
The strikes followed the UN Security Council's adoption of a draft resolution submitted by Washington and Japan that demanded an immediate end to attacks by Yemeni forces on Israeli-owned or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. Yemeni officials have strongly condemned the strikes and vowed a painful response to them.
The crowd here is sending a strong message to the US and the UK. The demonstrators vow that the aggression against their country will not go unpunished. They also say operations against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea will end if Israel puts an end to its genocidal war on Gaza.
Now, Tehran has hailed Yemen's actions against Israeli interests in the Red Sea as US and its allies will launch attacks on Yemen. Iran's foreign minister slammed Thursday's strikes, which Washington claims are aimed at ensuring the freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. Hossein Amri Abdullahian said Yemen is fully committed to maritime and shipping security, but only takes action in solidarity with the Gazans. The foreign minister also said White House needs to stop its military support for Tel Aviv in order for security to return to the entire region. Yemen's military has been targeting Israeli-linked vessels to block their passage through the Red Sea. Both Tehran and Sana'a have also repeatedly warned the U.S. against any provocative action that endangers the peace and security of the region. The Russian ambassador to the United Nations has warned a wave of joint strikes by the U.S. and U.K. on Yemen risk a full-fledged war in the region of West Asia.
There is no authorization for the arbitrary acts that the U.S. and its allies are carrying out in Yemen. This resolution is fraught with the risk of a full-fledged war, not only in the country, but throughout the region.
Nebenzia described the strikes as a blatant armed aggression against another country. He was speaking at a UN Security Council meeting on international peace and security on Friday. Also in that meeting, a UN Assistant Secretary General sounded the alarm over potential security repercussions in Yemen and the region. Khaled Khiari added, there is an alarming risk of worsened regional tensions. Offensive by U.S. and British militaries against Yemen has drawn a chorus of condemnation from multiple countries. American demonstrators take to the streets of Seattle, Washington, to protest U.S.-UK military strikes on Yemen.
U.S. out of Yemen, U.K. out of Yemen, hands off Yemen now!
Protesters chanted hands off Yemen now and let Yemen live. They held banners reading stop U.S.-UK bombing of Yemen. Activists are accusing the Biden administration of threatening to unleash a regional war by attacking Yemen and supporting the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians. They call for emergency mobilization across the U.S. to protest these warmongering moves. And Jordanians once again take to the streets of Amman in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza amid brutal Israeli strikes. But this time, protests also saw them reaffirming a support for Yemen, which has been hit by Israel's allies. Now, rain did not prevent Jordanians from voicing support for Gazans, who've been subjected to U.S.-backed Israeli genocide campaign for about 100 days. They also expressed support for Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, denouncing Israeli plans to forcibly displace Gazans. Demonstrators also condemned strikes by the U.S. and Britain on Yemen. Bahrain also saw a similar protest, with participants condemning the strikes on Gaza and Yemen. Bahraini protesters slammed the Al-Khalifa regime for backing the strikes on Yemen. They also called for closure of U.S. bases on their land, as well as the Israeli embassy, condemning normalization of ties with Tel Aviv. Bahrain's main opposition group, the Al-Wefaq, also denounced the attack on Yemen as a war crime, warning is aimed at destabilizing the region to serve Israeli interests. Al-Wefaq also slammed Manama regime for its participation in the U.S.-led coalition in the Red Sea. Bahrain is the only Arab nation to join it. Despite creation of the coalition, Yemen says its retaliatory operations against Israeli-linked ships will continue till the regime's genocidal war on Gaza ends and siege on the territory is lifted. All right, joining us now from Sana'a is Yusuf Maori for an update. Hello, Yusuf. A lot of provocative actions by the U.S., UK, along with Bahrain, the Netherlands, and Australia there on Yemeni soil that could easily ignite the entire region. What's the latest you could tell us?
Igniting the entire region is what it seems to be at play over here. And I think the Ansarullah officials have made it very clear that the U.S. is sparking another conflict, another war in the Middle East by their military activities in the Red Sea and also their latest attacks on Yemen. Again, the latest attack took place at around 3:30 in the morning, and this was around an hour time difference between the airstrike that occurred just the night before. And they seem to be targeting the Al Anad military base, and this is the military base that used to house the radar systems and the Yemeni fighter jets prior to 2015, prior to the Saudi-led coalition's bombardment of Yemen. Since then, all of the radars and all of the weapon radar systems and fighter jets have been transformed into a different unknown location. The U.S. Central Command Station, they tweeted just a couple of hours ago that they confirmed that they've targeted radar sites. However, two nights ago, they made a tweet. They issued a tweet or statement stating that they targeted radar. So there's a different change in dialect and speech when it comes to what their targets are. The night before, they said they targeted radars. However, now they're saying targeting radar sites. Well, of course, the Al Anad military base, it's a radar site, but there's no radars currently at that location. So the Ansar Allah, they're still within their military. They still have the military capability to launch ballistic missiles into the Red Sea. They still have the military capability to launch and guide unmanned drones within the radius of 2,000 kilometers. So that puts much of the U.S. and British military bases in the region within the reach of the Ansar Allah military army units. That puts the military manifestations, the Western military manifestations and warships and navy fleets in the Red Sea still within the target of the Ansar Allah ballistic missile system, because as has been confirmed by Ansar Allah officials, not really, there wasn't much that was damaged at this particular military airbase. It was confirmed that the only thing damaged was the taxi of the runway and a couple of armored vehicles and trucks that were stationed at this Al Anad military airbase, which is the only target here in the capital Sana'a for the moment.
Okay, stay safe. Thank you for that update. Yusuf Mowry there joining us from the Yemeni capital. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way onto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
The splitter and a spreader of sciences. In the name of God, the All Merciful, the All Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and heartiest congratulations to you on a very special occasion. Today is the first of Rajab, the month when God Almighty showers His blessings on the seekers of truth, the seekers of forgiveness, the penitents, the worshippers, and all those who strive in His path. The first day of Rajab also happens to be the auspicious birth anniversary of a very special person. He was none other than the namesake of the Prophet of Islam, and in fact, the fifth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Please stay with us for a special feature on the life and times of Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, who was descended on both sides, that is, father and mother, from the Almighty's last and greatest messenger to all mankind. First, we present you a statement worth pondering upon from the fifth Imam. If I found worthy carriers for my knowledge, which Allah, the Great and Almighty, has given to me, I would proclaim monotheism, Islam, religion, and Islamic laws. How can I do that? My great-grandfather, the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, found no worthy carriers for his knowledge. Thus, he sighed deeply on the pulpit and said, "Question me before you lose me, for there is much knowledge among these ribs." What you heard is the statement recorded in Volume 2 of the book Safinatul Bihar from the namesake and fifth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He was prophesied by the seal of messengers as Baqirul Ulum, or the splitter and spreader of sciences. Born in the Prophet's city, Medina, 57 years after the Prophet's migration from Mecca to Medina, and 46 years after the passing away of the Prophet from the mortal world, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, was knowledge personified. His father, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, was the son of the Prophet's younger grandson, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, while his mother, Fatima, peace upon her, was the daughter of the Prophet's elder grandson, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. He was inheritor of the celestial knowledge bequeathed by the Prophet, on the commandment of God to his great-grandfather, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. It was divine providence. He was born on the 1st of Rajab, which is one of the four sacred months of the Islamic calendar. It is the month in which the All-Merciful, in addition to the regular conduits of mercy, opens up special passageways to his creatures for attaining greater heights of virtue. Indeed, fortunate are those who grab this opportunity to strive towards the bounties of the hereafter. Last night, on the eve of Rajab, most of the faithful may have performed the special prayers and recited the exclusive supplications in the Divine Court. Today, many are fasting and are observing the special prayers of the 1st of Rajab. The faithful are humbly requesting God to firm up their faith, enlighten their minds, illuminate their hearts, purify their souls, strengthen their spirits, and make them worthy recipients of the vessels of knowledge specified by the 50 Imam. They are also praying to the Lord Most High to alleviate the sufferings of all believers, especially the defenseless people of Gaza in occupied Palestine, who for the past 3 months are the victims of the brutal bombing of the illegal Zionist entity, which is backed by the US, Britain, France, and Germany. God's promise is true. He will surely make the believers triumphant, no matter what atrocities the hypocrites and the faithless commit, since he has preserved for the salvation of humanity the prophet of Islam's 12th and last infallible heir, who will reappear in the end times as Imam Qa'im al-Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance to red planet Earth of all oppression through establishment of the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. Amen. For his part, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, who as a 4-year-old was present in Karbala on the day of Ashura, Muharram 10th, 61 AH, when history's most heartrending occurred, and who in its equally tragic aftermath, despite his tender age, suffered imprisonment in Damascus, along with his parents, aunts and grand-aunts, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, and Umm Kulthum, peace upon her, has said, "The master of the affair was named as Mahdi, because he will unearth the original Torah and other heavenly scripture from the cave in Antioch. He will judge among the people of the Torah, according to the Torah, among the people of the Evangel, according to the Evangel, among the people of the Psalms, in accordance with the Psalms, and among the people of the Quran, in accordance with the Quran." These words from the Imam, on whose authority scholars wrote accounts of the prophets of the past, the Sunnah Wasira, or behavior and practice of the Prophet of Islam, the exegesis of ayahs of the Noble Quran, and the jurisprudential principles of the Shariat, provide solace to the hearts of not just Shia Muslims, but also our Sunni brethren, whose books of hadith are replete with countless narrations from Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, As a matter of fact, all monotheists take comfort from the words of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, who, as the righteous heirs of the Prophet of Islam, preached peace, friendship, and fraternity, unlike the usurper Umayyad and Abbasid caliphs, who, like the satanic Takfiri terrorists of our own days, divided Muslims into sects, massacred people, terrorized countries, destroyed the heritage of the nations of the past, and looted the masses to fill up their coffers. Those in doubt are invited to study the fruitful life of the 15th infallible Imam, who, during his 19-year mission, resisted against five tyrannical Umayyad caliphs, whose empire that stretched from Spain in the west to Pakistan in the east has long evaporated, in order to pass on to posterity the ethereal values of universal brotherhood. Imam Baqir, peace upon him, groomed leading lights of Islam who could be called immortals. Names that come to mind are Zurare bin Ayan, the master theologian, Muhammad bin Muslim bin Rayah, the eminent jurist, Fuzail ibn Yasar, the exegete, Ma'ruf bin Kharbuth, the hadith compiler, Buraid al-Ijli, the rhetorician, and Abu Basir Laith al-Bakhtari, the famous traditionist. These six are mentioned in the list of the 10 pegs of the world. Then there was Abu Hamza Somali, who held an esteemed place among the companions of both the 4th and 5th Imams, and through whom some moving supplications have been conveyed to posterity, including the famous one taught by Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, and recited till this day by the faithful before Sahar, or late midnight in the fasting month of Ramadan. Among the 5th Imam's companions was also the renowned poet and master of Arabic literature, Kumeyt ibn Ziyad al-Asadi, whose panegyrics titled Al-Hashimiyat are still recited to this day. Imam Baqir, peace upon him, who despite his grooming of scholars, would at times love to toil under the blazing sun of Arabia by personally engaging in farming in order to set the practical example of dignified labor for earning of legal and lawful subsistence bread, has said, "There is no job better than farming, and there is no benefit better than the benefit of farming, because both benevolent and malevolent grazing animals and birds benefit from it and pray for the farmer." He also encouraged people to marry, raise children, and cater to their needs in lawful and legal manner, but at the same time fulfill their duties towards Allah, the All-Merciful Creator. Here is one of the famous sayings of the 5th Imam on the authority of his ancestor the Prophet. "Islam is a firm and decisive faith. Scale its heights, but calmly. Don't put excessive weight of prayer on your bodies. Don't be like a rider who tires his animal by traveling more than it possibly can. It may fail to carry you to your destination. Satan has misguided some of our people and made them abstain from meat and other delicacies. Such abstention is against the Shariat." In conclusion, in view of the significance of this month, we refer to a very famous hadith, which says that anyone who recites in Rajab, Astaghfirullah wa atubu ilayh, 70 times in the morning and 70 times in the evening, and thereafter raising his hands, says, Allahumma aghfir li wa tub alayya, should he or she die during Rajab, God shall be pleased with him or her, and hellfire shall not touch him or her. The Prophet also said, God Almighty forgives all the sins of a person who offers 10 rak'at of the ritual prayer during one of the nights of Rajab, reciting Surah Hamd and Surah Kafirun once and Surah Tawheed thrice in each rak'at.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back to Gaza Under Attack, coming to you from the British capital, London. I'm Saeed Puriza. As the Israeli-U.S. bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip rages on, here's a quick look at some of the latest developments. A historic day, a landmark hearing at the International Court of Justice. The court is hearing over 2 days whether the Israeli regime is committing genocide in its war on Gaza. The case brought by South Africa in December last year accuses apartheid Israel of violating the 1948 UN Genocide Convention with mass killings, expulsions, and statements describing Palestinians as subhuman. The Genocide Convention was unanimously adopted in 1948 after World War II, a unified commitment by the international community to never let atrocities like the Holocaust happen again. These are the judges who will have to decide if the Israeli regime is deliberately wiping out Palestinians in Gaza as an ethnic group, entirely or in part. South Africa decided to bring the case before the world's highest court after UN resolutions calling for a stop to Israel's actions in the Gaza Strip were either vetoed by the U.S. or ignored by the Israeli regime. Ahead of the hearing at The Hague, the Israeli occupation army has continued to pound the Gaza Strip with airstrikes. 25,000 Palestinians, more than 10,000 of them children, have been killed in the U.S.-Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza so far. At least 60,000 others have been wounded. Joining me on this program, Maher Hajjaj, head of Palestine Pulse, a Palestinian UK-based group working on modern ways to amplify the Palestinian movement in the U.K. And via Skype from San Francisco Bay, California, Rick Sterling, a veteran journalist working with, among others, anti-war, L.A. Progressive, and Al Mayadeen. Welcome to you both. Let me start with you, Maher. The fact that, obviously, this is a historic day, that Israel is in the docks of the ICJ. What are your initial impressions?
I think it's the beginning of the end of Israel, politically at least, and it's, as you said, a historic day. It's going to shape and form politics for future as well. I think as Palestinians, our frustration was built based on Israel not being accountable. So we know the crimes they have committed, mm-hmm. the sins, if you want to call them, for 75 years. But it is now, the time has now come for them to be accountable. And we are so proud of South Africa to come and stand up because they faced a very similar injustice of an apartheid, which we are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to produce a result that will blow not just Israel, but actually the West entirely, because they had an unequivocal support that they now have to still justify. And I do believe that an injunction from the ICJ would mm-hmm. be actually applied. It's mm-hmm. just how to actually put it enforced would be a different question.
Mm-hmm.
But the unequivocal support from Rishi Sunak and Biden now has to change, because then they'll be fully as well liable for this prosecution.
Mm-hmm. The British and the American leaders.
Yeah.
Rick, how ironic is it that more than seven decades since the Genocide Convention was adopted in December in Paris, France, to prevent a repeat of the atrocities of World War II, including the Holocaust, Israel finds itself in the dock facing a genocide case?
Well, I totally agree that our thanks need to go to South Africa for leading this initiative at the Hague. It's very significant in a number of respects. Of course, one of the other facts that happened in 1948, we had not only the Geneva Convention, we had the creation of the State of Israel, and South Africa formally adopted apartheid. Mm. It took the world's action and pressure to force the collapse of the apartheid state of South Africa, and now South Africa is leading the charge to expose and to denounce genocide being committed by Israel in Palestine. So it's significant in a lot of respects, and our thanks go to South Africa.
Our thanks go to South Africa. Maher, do you think, given what is happening at The Hague now, the international community has finally woken up to this unfolding genocide?
I'm not going to say it's too late, because it's probably never too late until the whole world puts an end to this. And when I say an end, I mean an actual end, mm-hmm. not just speaking in nice sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing we kind of forgotten about is the Iraq War. That was an illegal invasion, and 1 million innocent Iraqis killed for an absolute lie. We again are asking for accountability. We're not just asking for a ceasefire. We're asking for accountability, because if there is no accountability, then obviously the whole thing is in question.
Yeah.
The Iraq war, we need to go back and take a step. That was our first sign that there is going to be war crimes committed, and they think they can get away with it. So if Israel is found to be committing war crimes, which absolutely the evidence is black and white clear,
mm-hmm.
then so should the previous situations like the Iraq war be held accountable as well. We had an apology from Tony Blair after the Choker report, but That's
2015, was it?
Yeah, that's not accountability.
And Rick, very, very quickly, as far as the prestige of the United Nations as an institution that the ICJ is a part of, how does the ruling, the outcome of this hearing over the 48 hours that we'll be watching, what will be the repercussions of it? For the United Nations, if it happens to be in favor of Israel, for instance?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, ordinarily Israel just thumbs its nose at United Nations commissions or the International Criminal Court. However, in this case, it's the Geneva, the Treaty on Genocide, and being taken to the International Court of Justice, and Israel is not able to just thumb its nose at it, and it is paying a lot of attention to this because they know their reputation globally is being challenged. In the West, Israel's largely gotten a free pass, but things are changing rapidly. The reputation of Israel is changing dramatically. A lot of people are becoming aware of the 75-year history of the Nakba. There's an awakening, especially among youth in the West. Another sign of the importance of this is that we can see is within Israel, where demoralization and division is taking place on an unprecedented scale. And we can see that Haaretz is reporting that they're now blaming social media from Russia for the demoralization and division, which is, it's almost comical. It's a replay of the Russiagate hoax that took place in the U.S. Of course, the division and demoralization is not because of social media or fake news accounts or fake social media accounts. It's because of the reality that that the Israeli intelligence, the collapse of the Israeli military, and the evident destruction of tremendous numbers of people. It's almost a war on children. 100,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been injured or killed. This is an atrocity that cannot be hidden, and the world is seeing this. So
the world is certainly seeing this. Well, I'll let you comment more on that a little later, perhaps. But let's have a look at this. Judges at the United Nations top court, the ICJ, have been told that the Israeli regime is committing genocide in Gaza, as we've been discussing. Lawyers representing South Africa pleaded with the court to urgently order Israel to halt its military operation. South Africa said the latest bombardment of Gaza is part of a decades-long oppression of the Palestinians by Israel. Judges at Thursday's hearing at the International Court of Justice have been asked to impose binding preliminary orders on Israel, including an immediate halt to the regime's military campaign in Gaza. Let's listen in to some of the arguments made on the first day of the hearing.
Gaza, which is one of the most densely populated places in the world, is home to approximately 2.3 million Palestinians, almost half of them children. For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea. They are also at immediate risk of death by starvation, dehydration, and disease as a result of the ongoing siege by Israel, the destruction of Palestinian towns, the insufficient aid being allowed through to the Palestinian population, and the impossibility of distributing this limited aid while bombs fall. This conduct renders essentials to life unobtainable.
Israel has a genocidal intent against the Palestinians in Gaza. That is evident from the way in which Israel's military attack is being conducted, which has been described by Ms. Hassim as C. It is systematic in its character and form. The mass displacement of the population of Gaza, headed into areas where they continue to be killed, and the deliberate creation of conditions that, quote, lead to a slow death, unquote. There is also the clear pattern of conduct, the targeting of family homes and civilian infrastructure, laying waste to vast areas of Gaza, and the bombing, shelling, and sniping of men, women, and children where they stand, the destruction of the health infrastructure, and lack of access to humanitarian assistance.
Some of the lawyers, the South African lawyers, presenting the case to the judges of the ICJ. Maher, the Israeli side will be presenting their case on Friday, but ahead of those official statements, we heard high-ranking officials in the Israeli regime calling it blood libel and anti-Semitic. Your reaction?
I don't know what is anti-Semitic for Israel if you criticize anything they do. They criminalize nearly everything. As you know, there's the UK boycott bill that's now come into play. So, I mean, these are just shield terms to obviously just get away and get people to back off from them. But at the end of the day, the evidence is black and white. And what a moment to see this. Nelson Mandela would be very proud mm-hmm. of his nation to stand up for the Palestinians, as he said he would. And as a Nakba, a family that comes from the Nakba, they will be very proud to see the moment where this actually comes into a proper result. The world has to see this, and the West and the whole world politicians need to act upon it. Mm-hmm. That's very more important. What they say, what they they're defending themselves, Israel, by saying these things, as any criminal would, but they are terrorists, inhumane, and they will have to be held accountable.
And Rick, how does this reflect on the United States as Israel's staunchest ally, the fact that Israel is facing this genocide case at the ICJ?
Well, the Biden administration is very concerned because they're... global reputation is on the line, and also Joe Biden is seeing his polling numbers continue to decline as increasing numbers of people realize what's going on in Gaza and are wondering why is the U.S. continuing to provide weapons. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are going to be actions to block the weapons being loaded onto ships in the United States to try to prevent the transport of more weapons. So the U.S. has said that the South African initiative is quote unquote meritless, but the facts are clear. 90 to 100,000 people have been killed and wounded, and the intent is also clear because Israeli leaders have said it explicitly.
They certainly have, haven't they? This is Gaza Under Attack with me, Saeed Bourza, where we take a deep dive into the news of and around the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Given its own dark history of apartheid, it's been befitting that South Africa's case of genocide against Israel is being heard at the International Court of Justice at The Hague. We spoke to a South African attorney and the executive member of the Palestine Solidarity Alliance Youth League based in Johannesburg, Azhar Sakur, and asked him what outcome he expected from the proceedings.
What will likely happen, and I think it's quite important to understand at the moment, the hearing that's currently ongoing today and tomorrow, the judgment is going to be relating to provisional measures. So that's essentially an emergency order that can be applied before the main hearing of the case begins. We've seen even earlier in the proceedings this morning that the attorneys were asked by the judges to only speak to the facts that relate to the provisional measures that were requested. So that is, I think, the first thing to understand. So any order granted by the court today or after today and tomorrow's hearing will be provisional measures. It's not going to outright say, yes, Israel is guilty of committing genocide. It will simply say, while we're finding the outcome of this case, you need to stop what you're doing. Now, the provisional measures requested by South Africa includes that Israel should suspend military activities in Gaza, stop killing Palestinians, and prevent the forced displacement and deprivation of access to adequate food, water, fuel, shelter, and sanitation. So we're likely to see from a humanitarian perspective the ICJ to grant provisional measures in this line. After this order for provisional measures may be granted, there will be mounting pressure on Israel to comply. Allies of Israel who have unequivocally supported the genocide on Gaza, defending the actions of the Israeli military, will have no leg to stand on in defending them. So that will put pressure for Israel to comply, but it is likely that they will not comply.
We also asked Azhar if he had confidence in the independence of the court.
I'd like to believe in the independence of the court. When looking at the panel of judges that are there, they are from a number of different nations. Each party was also allowed to have a judge from their country also attend. So there is a judge from South Africa and a judge from Israel. And I would like to believe that there is a degree of independence that the court will have. But what's also quite important in terms of my belief of this independence is that if we have an outcome in the calling for from these provisional measures that the ICJ does not grant it, I mean, the independence will be questioned, and not only will the independence of the court be questioned, but from countries from the global south and from the rest of the world, which is not part of the Western world, we will start to call to question the existence of these global structures because they will then be seen to only be effective and work where a certain group of people are applying for assistance from these courts. So very, very important that these courts show their independence and actually apply the law and not apply any biases.
The Director General of the World Health Organization has told reporters in Geneva that after 100 days of conflict, the situation in the Gaza Strip was indescribable. Tedros Ghebreyesus listed the lack of medical facilities, clean water and sanitation alongside overcrowded living conditions and creating the ideal environment for diseases to spread. WHO officials also cited the lack of access to the worst hit areas a major factor in their inability to help those most in need. Let's listen in.
This Sunday marks the 100th day of the conflict in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory. The situation is indescribable. Almost 90% of the population of Gaza, 1.9 million people, have been displaced, and many have been forced to move multiple times. People are standing in line for hours for a small amount of water, which may not be clean, or bread, which alone is not sufficiently nutritious. Only 15 hospitals are functioning, even partially. The lack of clean water and sanitation and overcrowded living conditions are creating the ideal environment for disease to spread.
Nowhere in Gaza is a safe place. You need what we call a depot place, and that you can proceed safely. And if you do not get the permission, you cannot move. So our requests were repeatedly rejected. We hope and we plead that we got kind of confirmation that the mission for tomorrow to hospitals in the north is approved. So I'm a little bit like first see, then believe.
The barrier to delivering humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza is not the capabilities of the UN, WHO or our partners. The barrier is access. We call on Israel to approve requests by WHO and other partners to deliver humanitarian aid.
Rick, we're witnessing the impact of this genocide in real time. If the Israeli regime isn't made to stop by either the U.S. and its allies through withdrawing support or other means, Gaza will be destroyed and the people will definitely be displaced. Is that the right way to look at it?
Well, that is a real danger. You've got 2.3 million people, that 1% of whom have been killed in the last 3 months. This needs to stop, obviously. So my first hope is that the International Court of Justice will issue a preliminary injunction requiring Israel to stop. Whether they will or not, it remains to be seen, but it's important for the credibility of the United Nations and the International Court of Justice that they make such a determination. I think, of course, this has been going on since October 7, but the Nakba has been going on for over 75 years. The oppression of Gaza particularly has been going on since for 30 or 40 years. So Palestine is still the issue, and it's come, it's emerged from where it was being hidden for many years, and now it's front and center, and I hope the world will take a look and finally
achieve some kind of resolution, some kind of a compromise solution that says satisfactory both to Tel Aviv and to the Palestinian people.
Only time will tell. And Maher, final question to you. Despite everything we heard the judges say or there at The Hague, despite what the UK Foreign Secretary said about the casualties being too high, still we don't see any cancellations of the weapons licenses, for example, and all the rest of it. How can we mobilize here internationally in greater numbers to pressure these governments to take some kind of action to put an end to the bloodshed?
Continue what we do, which is go in the streets. They don't like that for a reason. Put the pressure on, raise awareness, and hold them accountable, challenge them legally, which is also what we are doing. I mean, as you said, the Foreign Secretary the other day couldn't even answer questions on the committee panel. That says a lot. In terms of the trades deal, that will have to be cancelled as soon as we get the injunction, hopefully, from the ICJ. But more importantly, it's important to note that Israel has lost. They have lost this war. They cannot win. Mm-hmm. They have lost from a military perspective. They lost the media war. And they lost the public and country support. Mm-hmm. The question now is, what's next? What's the solution? And from a Palestinian perspective, seeing that they have taken off the two-state solution off the table, that leaves us with no other choice but to call for one Palestine democracy, mm-hmm. one state. And there is nothing genocidal about that. We are asking just for the state itself, completely the land, to be an actual real democracy for all people, mm-hmm. rather than the apartheid state that it is now, that is committing a genocide against my people.
All right, Maher Hajjaj and Rick Sterling, thank you both very much. And thank you. Join us again for the latest news and analysis. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.